This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals? They pick the right cards, they somehow end up in first class for the price of coach. Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards are worth the annual fee and which just make your wallet heavier. When lounge access beats buying airport dinner for four. And when it makes sense to book flights with cash versus points. So don't travel dumb. Travel smart. Upgrade trips, not bills, with NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast.
The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Mark Parton. Before we get to Mark, let me say a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. Our social media is Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Follow us there. We have a Facebook page as well. We are pretty much everywhere you get your podcasts. So if you listen to us on a streaming device, as most of you do, give us a good rating. Give us a thumbs up. Say a few nice things. That costs you nothing, but it helps people find the show. Boosts our presence. Maybe one day I'll make a living at this. It's only been 14 years. I think I'm due. If you want to write me, it's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Write me, ask me travel questions, or maybe you think you'd be right for the show. Maybe you know somebody who'd be right for the show and make a good guest. That's where you get me. Mark Parton is a high school friend of mine. I've known him for over 40 years, which is weird because I'm only 29. Hell, ugh. Anyway, Mark and I go way, way back. From stealing beers from his dad's fridge and drinking them in a field in suburban Chicago to where we are today, we have always stayed in touch. Mark always loved traveling. He first did this show back in 2013 when he and his wife Nancy were living in the Oakland Hills outside of San Francisco. Mark was in the wine business. He's had a number of businesses, always hustling, that guy. But he and his family, he has two daughters. They moved to Scottsdale when the kids were young, and now the kids are in college. He and Nancy are both empty nesters now, which means they can travel even more. And recently, they took a dream trip to Japan, their first trip ever there. Spent two great weeks, and they loved it, as many people do when they go to Japan. I certainly loved it both times I've gone. So I've been meaning to check in with Mark after his trip, and I went, wait a minute, why not hear about his trip on the Travel Tales podcast? So I combined business and pleasure. Actually, hearing about travel is never a business to me. It's always pleasure. So I checked in with Mark, and we caught up about his trip to Japan. If you're in the Phoenix area and want to exchange money, say you need currency for a trip that's coming up, go check out Mark at his business, Scratch Exchange, and he'll hook you up with some foreign currency. But right now, let's hear about his trip to Japan. Here's my chat with my old pal, Mark Parton. Mark Parton, welcome back, because I only have you every 12 years. That's I had to look it up when you were on last, and it was June of 2013. So, man, in a dozen years, first of all, if I'm still doing this in a dozen years, you can just kill me right now. That's ridiculous. I can't believe I've been doing it this long.
Well, you've got over 500 of these things, though.
I know.
You've got a pretty good portfolio by now.
And we only have, what, 40 years of history? 40 plus years?
Yeah, I was talking to Terrier about that the other day. I was like, I've known him since I was 16, maybe 15.
Yeah.
So yeah. Wow. Yeah. Over 40 years.
That's crazy. Oh. And I think so we last 2013, we last talked. In 2013, you were still living in the Bay Area, weren't you? You were still, where outside of San Francisco were you? I can't remember. Concord?
So no. I was, no, for a short time I was.
Yes, I
you
visited you there.
Saved me. Yes, you saved me. Because we were living there, and I think you came into town
Yeah.
To talk us out of leaving.
Well, yeah. And you were like, we're not digging it. And then I was like, yeah, because you live an hour outside
San Diego.
Yeah, you were living outside of the city, like 45 minutes, and you never went into the city. Could have been any suburb, you know. You were just like, you never went into.
Right.
Like, you're not getting the full San Francisco experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you came into town. We went up to Napa. That was a big day. We went up to Napa. I tasted a bunch of wine, and then we decided to go down into San Francisco and get dinner and taste more wine. And then on our way back in out to my little place out in Concord, we drove past the Oakland Hills. And I remember looking up and seeing all the lights of the Oakland Hills and saying, that's where I want to be. If I'm going to stick around here, that's where I got to be. And so I think within a month, we found a place and rented a place there for the next 12 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. Yeah, it worked out really well. And so, thank you for that. I owe you a big solid for that.
You're welcome.
Because from there, I ended up, I started the wine business. And the last time I talked to you, I had sold the wine business and I was down to my last 6 months, I think, of working for these guys before I left. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And a few things have happened since then. So
a few things. Yeah. So you're in Phoenix. What year did you move to Phoenix? I can't remember.
So I bought a house here in June of 2012, moved the I bought essentially what was a grandma's house and had it gutted and then moved the family in August. And then I went back and forth for about 18 months because I had a contract with the guys that bought the company. And so I finally moved in full time, like in December of 2018 into my house. And so, and then when I took the kids down to, we had Christmas Day. And then the next day we went down to Costa Rica for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And so, that was a fun one. Yeah.
One of the reasons you're on this time, because you just took your first trip to Japan and you were asking me about it before you left. And I was surprised because you've traveled a bit, and I was surprised that you and your wife, Nancy, you hadn't been there before. But I think a lot of your travel has been to either Europe or South America, mostly wine regions, I've noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was it, right? It's funny you say that just because when we moved out to the Bay Area from Chicago and I got into the wine business, before I went to work at this one winery, I went down to South America. I went down to Chile for 3.5 weeks just to go check out the wine industry and the business down there. So that was my going down to South America. But yes, for the most part, we'd spent more time over in Europe, France, Italy,
UK, you've been a lot.
Has been the UK a ton. And I found a great, champagne region there, down in, Kent. Southeast of London.
British champagne.
Interesting. It is. You know what?
Come on.
And I'll tell you what. It's interesting enough that the French are buying land there and building wineries there. And they have been for, I want to say, the last 5 or 10 years. And they've got some good, it's not champagne. I mean, it's not the champagne
well,
region.
It champagne.
And it's not the
sparkling
it's not. It's sparkling. Yeah, it's sparkling wine. It's pretty good. They're getting there, and it's a matter of, just mature fruit coming off those vines, and it's coming and it's getting better. So
do you think this is a climate change related? Is it all of a sudden
there, that region is struggling. Champagne region is the wine industry struggling right now for the most part, but even certain regions are struggling right now with, even Champagne. I saw something on 60 Minutes not too long ago, them talking about how just things aren't growing the way they had been in the past. So so they're struggling there and they're looking for alternatives. And it just so happens that, places in England are actually, in the UK are actually looking pretty good for them. So we'll see how it plays out. But some of the big champagne houses are buying land in south of London. So
yeah,
good stuff.
It really makes you wonder about every time I go up to Napa and Sonoma now, they, my friends who live up there, they're dodging fires every season, I think the wine range is going to keep moving farther up north. It's now into Washington and even BC,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the valley floor in Napa, it's getting warm.
Yeah.
You know, and it has for a long time. And that's, you know, certain fruits grow well in that environment. You know, it's why Cab and Sauvignon Blanc are big in that place. So in that space. So in any event, yeah, no, it's moving north and you're getting really, and especially like Pinot Noir, you know, it's, you're doing what it's doing really well up in Oregon and very popular. Very popular.
Well, speaking of drinking, you just got hammered with my friend Terrier, my Norwegian friend Terrier, in Osaka, Japan.
I think I dodged a bullet on that one twice. went out with him twice. Yeah. No, Japan was fantastic. It was, I think you had mentioned it earlier, like I hadn't been to that side of the world. And I'm not sure why, we just kept getting attracted
kids
back to Europe. Yeah, and that's it. And, you know, my daughters speak French, so it was always nice to go over to, you know, Europe and, you know, run around there. And you kind of know it. And that, so you kind of go back to what you know a lot of times.
And now they're both in college and you're empty nesters and now you're taking off. Look at you seeing more of the world. You had this planned for like a year, right?
I did. It was like the minute my youngest one went off to school, like we were like, you know,
here we go.
Buckle up. It's time to go. So yeah, it was good.
How long were you there? 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Okay.
2 weeks.
That's a good amount of time.
No, it was perfect. It was probably one of the most perfect trips I've had for a lot of reasons. You know, it's only two people. Have to discuss what's going to need to get done versus, you know, two kids that it's just tough to get them to get their shoes on to get out the door a lot of times.
What does everybody want to eat? Here we go.
Yeah, exactly. So it was, you know, that was it. Her and I had traveled a lot before we had kids. And so the little things that you get hung up on, you know, you're in your first sort of getting to know each other and traveling. I mean, those things they're not even an issue anymore. Like, you know, you calm down before you get wound up a lot of times, you know? And plus we're older and more mature and all that other stuff, but no, Japan was fantastic. It was, I will say the one mistake that I made doing this was, I've planned flights a zillion times. And for some reason I was like, you know, I want to fly direct into Tokyo, which is a good idea.
From Phoenix.
But you can't do that.
Yeah,
right?
Come through LA.
Phoenix isn't going there. Yeah. Or Dallas, Fort Worth.
Oh, and for America.
So I flew east to go west. And we got hung up in Dallas for an extra 3 hours before, it got delayed 3 hours. And so, you know, it's like by the time you're flying back, you know, you know, that in that time zone again.
Yeah.
Like
you're already losing
12
an entire
hours
day
later. Yeah. I know. And it's just like, I should have gone through LA. I should have spent the extra money and gone through LA. And I won't make that mistake again. But for the most part, American Airlines got us there. Fantastic. 13 and a half hours out of Dallas. And then we flew back on Japanese Airlines. Or Japan Airlines. And it was, man, they give you a little more leg room too. That's just
Japan Air,
such a great, good quality airline.
I flew them the one time I've flown overseas first class. I cashed in a bunch of miles and flew to Tokyo first class, Japan Airlines. And it was great. You had the choice of menu. Like you could either get a Western menu or the Japanese menu. And of course I took the Japanese, two kinds of sake. It was great. Little slippers. It was so great. So you land. Did you land Haneda or Narita?
We got into Narita.
Right. How did you get to the city? Because this is a big deal.
So we grabbed the train. We trained it in. So we went. So we got off a flight. So we're good about traveling light. So we didn't check any bags.
Good for you.
Small luggage. Got into the train station area, and there's like a whole nother sort of area where you can go in and ask questions, which I'll tell you what, these folks are, they want to help you so bad. They're so happy to help you. It was like amazing. Walked in there, told them where we wanted to go, told us exactly what track to get on, sold us our tickets, pointed us in the direction. I thought the lady was going to run us out the door and actually walk us to the train at one point. She wanted to help us so bad. And so so we got to our train, got on, and it was like about an hour 10 or something like that from Narita to Shinjuku Station. And this place is massive. Like, there's 200 exits and entrances to this place.
I was going to say, they have the record number amount of entrances and exits. It's really incredible. And it's like, it stretches like tentacles over blocks.
It's crazy. It is. And it does. It goes under like other building. Like, it's so spread out underneath there. So much so that we found out the day we left that there was actually a entrance to the underground, like just outside the door of our hotel. And we've been going around and like walking in the blocks, you know? So, but yeah, so it wasn't bad actually. You know, because we've navigated undergrounds all over the world before. And so it was never real, or at least Europe and the UK.
I mean, you've done the tube.
And now those,
you lived in Chicago.
Those are,
but this is
in
bigger.
Chicago. Yeah.
This is bigger. Oh, I mean, eventually you're going to make some, I'm pretty good with that stuff, but I mean, even, you know, we got our last trip, you know, we were trying to go out to the Sanrio, you know, Hello Kitty Land or whatever out there. And still, even though I watched the video online of how to get there, which train to take, we still got a little, it was our first day, but we still got a little, turned around. And then, we just asked a bystander with Google Translate who, like your, you know, the people at the airport, practically walked us to our train, way out of our way.
Sumimasen.
Yeah.
Sumimasen. You know, and whether it's just the average guy on the street, like we asked this lady, we were in Nara, and we'll talk about it later, but we just wanted to know which way to go. And so you, Sumimasen. And she's, I go, do you understand English? She's like, yeah, a little bit. And I'm like, I'm trying to get to the Big Buddha. And she's like, oh, and she got all excited. She goes, I know where that is. So she's like, walking us to the corner and around the corner, and it's right down there, and take a left. And just super helpful. And the people that surprised me the most are the people that, like the conductors and the people that work for the train service. You know, it's like you go up to the window, and they're so happy to help with a smile. Like in this country, anywhere else I've ever been, it's like, yeah, it's over there. It's right over there. But these people were like, they were so like happy to help you out. It was like, it was amazing.
So how many days in Tokyo and did you, what were the highlights?
So 4 days in Tokyo, highlights were 7-Eleven on the first day. I've never seen a 7-Eleven is a scary place here in the United States. It is a gourmet shop, in Japan.
We would get the sushi there.
It's the
great.
The food there is
that
amazing.
That saved me, you know, because it can get expensive. And then for those little, the little square, with a rice sandwich bowl,
the little diamond. Yeah. They're
omusubi?
Like, they're little triangles.
No,
yeah.
I forget what it's called. But
I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, those little snacks are like a buck a piece or something. Those are my lunches all the time.
Yeah. They're delicious.
Yeah.
You know, and there's all kinds of sushi ones. They're fantastic.
Fresh.
So we got those one morning. I'm like, let's get one of those. And so we did that. Also, we went to a little breakfast place one morning and we just want to sit down and have some coffee. And so one of the things we got was, it was a big bun filled with egg salad and had like onions and all this other stuff in it. It was so delicious. Like, it was so creamy. And I was like, oh, I could have one of these every morning. And then there was all kinds of free food that they gave you along with the coffee, which kind of shocked me. So that was it. And then, for our first day, we had three things set up. We kind of hit the ground running. We were good. We got in late the night before, stayed up till about 9 and almost 10, and then went to bed, got up the next morning, and we had a 9 o'clock. We had a private tour with a guy, young man. He's probably about 25. His name is Kenta. And he did a private, he took us to the Meiji.
The shrine.
Shrine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was the first person, like we had come out of Shinjuku Station on our own the first night and walked to the hotel. It was actually pretty easy. Yeah. I'll tell you what, Google Maps is like, I don't know what they got going, but they connected with the transit system in Japan. And it's like, that is your ticket to figuring out how to get everywhere is Google Maps. But in any event, so we got, so we used that to get around. But so we went out with Kenta on the Tuesday morning, and we went to the Meiji Shrine. He showed us there, and we got to talk to him, and he was a Japanese kid who had been to the United States once, and I think he hung out in Austin, Texas for a while. So
of all the places.
So yeah. So I think he was there on a college thing.
Sure.
But in any event, super helpful kid and really nice, and got a lot hanging out with him. Did that, and then we did the Shibuya crossing.
Oh yeah, I got to take your photo and your video of you crossing the street.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I got a spot for you up. And so we got into the spot up over Starbucks.
Oh, right.
It's like a three-story Starbucks on the corner. So he took us up there, and we got to see it from that angle. So it was good. So that was one of the highlights. He walked us through the whole process of going through a shrine. So everything from the bows, you know, you bow at the gate, and then Tory gates, and then walked us through back to the actual shrine itself. And you do everything from there was the water that comes out, and there's like a little area where you got to wash your hands. Mm-hmm. And all that. So he walked us through that process and told us not to walk down the middle, because that's the gods walk down the middle of the road and people walk on the sides. So there was that. And then at the end, he helped us write a little prayer that you get to hang up on a thing within the shrine. And so, you know, we wrote down a couple of prayers to the kids and hung some stuff up there. So that was our first experience and him helping us navigate through the station. And even he got hung up a couple times. I mean, through Shinjuku Station, because the place is just massive. And so yeah, that was the first thing.
So,
first
of all, you know, when you're first, you land there, we've been hearing about Tokyo our whole lives, and then you finally get there. How about your expectations versus your first impressions? What did you think?
So you get there. Number one, you're sort of wiped out already, right?
Sure.
You've been in the air forever. But getting there again, getting out of, you get off the plane. So you've got to go through two different things, right? When you're getting out of you're going through immigration first.
Yeah.
And then you got to go through customs. So, and you think at first you're like, oh, it's all one, should all be one thing, but it's not. You got to go through two different kind of lines. And so get out of there. But everybody's, you know, a lot of people speak English. They're all there to help you out. They're super friendly. They're crazy friendly, like over the top friendly. It's like, you almost can't believe it.
And the streets,
but,
you know, I mean, you get in the streets, it's just like
crazy clean,
right? For a city of over 20 million, it's insanely clean, the cleanest, you know, it works, and it should be on paper. It should be chaos. You know what I mean? I've seen 1 million city, you know, a city of a million be just hell holes and absolute chaos, where that's over 20 million and it works. And it's efficient.
Well,
and clean.
You know, we did another tour. The next day, we did a tour with a gentleman. We had a sit down sushi dinner lunch with him, and he was telling us a little bit about just Japanese culture in general. And one of the things that he had mentioned was the three P's, and that is polite, patient, and punctual. And I was like, man, you nailed it, because these people were kind and polite on everybody was. Patient with, you know, everybody, whether it's Americans or Australians or whoever. And they're just shit runs on time. Like, I mean, like 2 minutes early on time. And if you're not on time, they think you're lazy. And so that's kind of their whole thing, you know? And so things just run on time like you've never been on time before. Well, it's amazing.
It's a matter of respect and courtesy. You know, when you're late, you're making other people wait. You're saying basically it's disrespectful. You're saying my time is more important than yours. And so that's right. You know, so there's this idea of look, if we don't all, you know, suck it up and you know, at least play by the rules and just it's about
that's it.
Consideration of others. There is a kind of thing just where we're all kind of in this together, and if we don't at least have some rules to follow, it's going to be awful. You know, it's just going to be every person out for themselves, like here.
Yeah. No, it's everybody is, again, you know, but everybody follows the rules.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, it's just that's
and not because they're forced to. Program it's just culturally, you know, it's better if we do.
It's accepted.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's
and there's
kinder.
Certain things you accept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's certain things you accept. Rules, like, you know, it's not like, you know, it's just like, hey,
no,
stand on this.
Common sense.
It's no smoking here. Don't smoke. Just smoke over there. That's a smoking section. And if you just do that, it's fine. You know, it's just we're all get along. Don't push it.
I think the only thing that was like, and just a tiny bit uncomfortable was sometimes the subway. If you don't time yourself getting on that subway, in other words, if you get on it during rush hour, expect to get packed in. I mean, because that's how they operate.
I tried to avoid it.
Everybody. Yeah. We just, you hit it sometimes. It just happens, unfortunately. And so you're in and it's, but everybody's quiet on the train. There's nobody talking.
Oh my God.
There's not a bunch of,
it's best.
So quiet. Like, it's like Zen on a train. And, it really is. And whenever it is somebody talking, they're usually not Japanese.
Oh yeah.
You know? It's,
that's true.
It's usually, but,
or the Chinese.
In any event, but we knew,
but it's also the Chinese.
But we had watched a zillion YouTube videos before. So we were trying to like learn as much about the culture as we possibly could to just adhere, you know? Once we got there, it was great. You know, we got in and
you did the touristy stuff and you saw the shrines the first day and all that kind of stuff. And you kind of learned the lay of the land. Did you do any offbeat stuff? Like go to any crazy, bars or like animal, you know, the capybara cafe and you sit around with wild animals or do something weird? Did you do something weird?
No. I will say one thing that we did, other thing we did that day, that first day was we did do a food tour. And the first place we went into was a sushi bar. And the first thing they handed us at first, I was like, I wasn't so sure I was going to eat this thing. It was a sea snail. And it had a toothpick in it. And I was like, I'm not sure I can do this. And then the guy was like, hey, you know, it's not for everybody. You don't have to eat it. Da, 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 da. He goes, but just put your toothpick in there and swirl it around to come out. And I pulled it out and it was cooked. And I was like, oh, this might not be bad. And I ate it and it was actually delicious. So that was the thing where people are always like, I don't know if I can eat the food there.
It was moving. It was still moving.
No, we did. When I was with Terrier, we had a moving shrimp, but that's another story altogether.
Well, wait a minute. Back up. Hold on. He posted that. The shrimp, it's like it was on his plate and it flipped up.
Yeah, that was I had ordered that and he took a video of it after I ordered it.
Yes.
And then I was the one who ended up eating it. And I'll tell you what, it was delicious.
How much does it move? I mean, wait a minute. It looks like
it's
a regular shrimp.
It's the muscles.
Okay.
It is. It's just a regular shrimp. You're eating it raw. It's completely, you know, it's cleaned, it's ready to go, and you just literally toss the thing in your mouth and it melts in your mouth, as they say.
Did it move?
Really, really does.
Did it move in your mouth?
Might have a little bit. It was good. It was really, I was surprised how good it was. But so we did do one crazy thing. It wasn't that crazy, but we had, so about 2 months before we left, the Foo Fighters were started touring. They were doing F1 show in Singapore.
Right.
And I was like, hey, I think if they're going to be in that part of the world, maybe they'll be in Tokyo. And it just so happened that they ended up being in Tokyo first full day we were there that night.
Cool.
So we did two walking tours. And then that night we went and saw Foo Fighters.
Were they at Budokan?
It was a place called, like, it was like a super arena or something like that. And it was big, but it wasn't like,
was it the Tokyo
100,000.
Dome? It wasn't the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
No, it wasn't Tokyo Dome, but it was a Siemens or something okay. like that. It was like, but it was about an hour north of where we were.
Oh, wow.
So again, you have to navigate the trains, right? And so we jumped on a train and took it up there. And we were exhausted, but it was a good show. It worked out really good and got to see a band, an opening band, a Japanese girl band, heavy metal band, which was pretty interesting.
Were they older? Was it Shonen Knife?
No. Okay. It was, they were young girls. It was good. They were pretty good. But
what, does a Japanese rock crowd act differently than an American rock crowd?
Oh, that's such a great question. Because that's part of the experience, right? Like you go to these things.
Yeah.
I like going to concerts all over the world just because crowds in different countries act different. And so, again, really polite and quiet, like, and Dave Grohl gets pretty wound up, but,
for sure.
But two things happened there that were really interesting to me. One is when we got there, we wanted to buy t-shirts, but they weren't inside the arena. You had to go to another part of the, like literally they let us leave the arena and go to this other part, buy our shirts and then get back in. And it was just like the honor system. It was the craziest thing. Like you could never do that in the United States. And so that was the first thing. And then the second thing was, when Dave would end a song, it would get really quiet in there. Like people were like sitting on the edge of their seats, wanting to listen to what he had to say. And you could hear some guy like in the way back, like up in the nosebleeds screaming, "We love you, Dave."
Yeah.
You know, it was like some American. Lost American way in the back. And
they all, shh, we're trying to listen.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just like, and the fact that that guy in the back could be heard all the way up front was just to me
hilarious.
It was like, this is interesting. Like people are so like respectful of, you know, his, you know, hearing what he has to say when he's talking. So it was just, that was really pretty cool.
It's like,
we got pretty good seats for that.
Yeah. I always remember it's like one of the famous like Beatles live footage is one of the, right before they stopped touring, there's this famous, it's a color film of them. And it has like, you know, orange kind of like the Beatles backdrop there. And that was shot in Japan. And one of the reasons that's they keep using clips from that, it was because it was the quietest crowd they've ever played in front of. So you could actually hear the music. The recording actually came out and they were so, you know, they would applaud in between, but they didn't just scream all the way through it. And so you could actually hear them. So it's still the best live footage you'll ever see of the Beatles live. They only played, you know, Japan once, you know, so just one tour of Asia. But that still remains the best live footage of them because the people were so polite and you through the music, you know, through the song, you could actually hear it. And so, famously. Yeah. But it's interesting. You know, and I tried to get you to go to a baseball game, but it was still, I think it was the playoffs.
Right. I wanted to do that.
I know, you can only do so
much. It's one of those, man, you know, and it's like we had a laundry list of stuff we wanted to do.
So,
I didn't even get to the Imperial Palace.
Okay.
Like that's supposed to be one of the things you need to go do. I didn't even get to that. And we went, I will tell you one other thing we did. And so real quick story, we were in London a couple years ago and the girls, we stayed up in Paddington and there's this one main Oxford Street. It's like just shopping district. So, girls want to go shopping. And so, I'd gone to the Canali store and bought a couple suits. And then when I was done, I had to go meet them and they were at this place called Uniqlo.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, oh, it's a woman's store. I don't want to go in there. I'll just wait out here for you. And so, anyways, fast forward last summer, we were in San Diego and Lauren says to me, hey, my youngest one. She goes, I want to go to Uniqlo. I'm like, all right, let's go over there. So we go to Uniqlo. We walk in. And for some, this time I'm a little bit more, I open my eyes a little bit more. I'm like, oh, they've got men's clothes here. I start walking around like, oh, shirts. Oh, they're so cheap. Oh, they fit great. And they're comfortable. And yeah, I'll take a few of those and some shorts and bought a bunch of clothes. And so when we went to Tokyo, before we went, it was like we found out where their like main store is. And by the way, they got their stores are, it's a Japanese store as a whole, but their stores are everywhere and they're like eight stories high and it's crazy. And the craziest thing was men's was at the top, which surprised me because as a guy who used to sell shoes, if you don't put men's clothes like so they can see that because men don't buy clothes unless they need them. Like, and right, right.
So you put them on the ground floor to get them walk by. And
you put them on the ground floor.
Oh, they have men's clothes.
They'll do it.
Yeah.
Women, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this one. Women, if you put a barrel of shoes out, and they will dig to the bottom of that barrel to find that right size.
Right.
And that's how it is, right?
Well,
and so I would think you'd put the women's floor at the very top and the men's floor at the very bottom. But they don't do it that way. But still, I'll tell you what, the place was packed.
Yeah.
And it was probably the most shopping I've done like at a regular retail store for clothes. I did it in Tokyo. And then when we were in Osaka, I was like, hey, let's go again because I need some other stuff. And so it was all, and you got to do the tax-free thing. So yeah.
Did you go to the, go ahead. Oh, the tax-free.
I was just saying it's really smooth. Tax-free is amazing there because it's literally, they give you when in through immigration, when you go through the immigration line, they literally give you, on the stamp that goes in your passport, there's a QR code. And that QR code is what you use whenever you spend more than $5,000 in a shop. 5,000 yen in a shop in Japan, they scan that and it automatically gives you tax free. And so you get a discount is essentially what it comes down to.
Yeah, duty free.
Duty free.
So did you go to the 8-story Tower Records, one of the last Tower Records?
I didn't. And I, now that you say that, I completely spaced it, but no, I didn't.
But when,
didn't do that one. But Steve told me about it too.
Yeah. When you talk about the 8th floor, it's interesting. That was one thing I had to learn in Tokyo. It's just like in America and a lot of places around the world, everything's on the ground floor, restaurants, bars, stores to get people who walk by. But in Tokyo, that thing you're looking for, you got a name of a restaurant or something. That could be on the 8th floor. It could be on of a skyscraper. You could be on the 20th and you had no idea, or just even like a suit store or whatever it is, a tailor.
Yeah.
And you think, well, this is a ground floor business. No, you got to look at that. And a lot of times it's written in Japanese. And so that's a little, it's like, man, I'm at the right address. Where the hell is this place? Because you're on the street going, I don't know where it is. Oh, it's on floor 5. And you're like, oh, okay. And then you take the elevator up and you open it up and, oh, there's the cafe you're looking for. So you got to look up.
No, that's exactly right. So it's funny you say that because we went to like one of our last days, we went to this one big shrine that I can't remember which one it was, but when we were done, we're like, hey, let's go grab some lunch somewhere. And so I literally Googled vegan restaurants near me. And I'm like, oh, there's one it's like 3 blocks from here. Let's go for a walk. So we walk over there and on the picture, it shows like it's going to be this big sign. We get there and I'm like looking around, I'm like, where is it? And she goes, it's up there. She points up and she goes, it's up there. And so sure enough, we like walk over, jump on an elevator, take the elevator up, get off the elevator and it's right there. And there's only 4 tables in this place. I mean, that's the other thing about Japan is like, people wait in line outside of a cafe that is super popular and there might be 7 or 8 slots that you can sit in there and
eat.
And people eat and they turn tables in there, man. And people go in, eat and get out. Like it's not a Italian place where you sit down and talk for 3 hours and, have drinks and everything. But, so we went into this place. Anyways, we went into this place. It was fantastic. And it was just so off the beaten path. And if you weren't, if you didn't know what you were looking for when you were going there, you would have never found it because you don't see it from the street, right? You got to,
right.
I had to look it up.
So
yeah.
You, because we got to blast through because you had so much to do. But you went to, okay, the hot spot. So Tokyo, you did about 4 days there, which is pretty good. I mean, that's about, I mean, you'd like to do more, but I mean, you could see a lot in 4 days if you're, you know, efficient. And then.
And you're walking.
Yeah, you're walking a lot. And then you went to Kyoto, right? Which is the other popular place. Right.
So I went to Hakone first. So we
Hakone,
took a
bullet
train.
We went there with the spa, the hot springs, which is about an hour outside of Tokyo for the people who it's a mountain region with the hot springs.
Yeah. Right. So we took a train down there and then we stayed there for two nights, and we stayed in a traditional ryokan.
Oh yeah. So I didn't do that. We stayed at a traditional hotel, but we did have a hot spring on our balcony, like our own tub.
Yeah, we did
a
too.
Hot tub. But tell me about the traditional. Is it a ryokan or ryokan? What? How's it? I'm butchering. So it's
me too. So so we got there. We took the bullet train, the Shinkansen.
Yeah.
We took that out to one spot, took a local train, and then we had to take a bus up into the mountains.
Yep.
And so
we did that.
So we jump off this bus and we're like, yeah, we got to walk down this road. It's raining. We get to the end of the road and we get into our ryokan. And, they greet you. They've got Japanese garb and all that kind of stuff. And sorry. And so anyways, so they're, you know, in their outfits, we get there, they hand us our so they give us outfits to wear.
Your kimonos.
As well. And so, kimonos. And so they take you to your room and they sit down with you. And like, we had one that was on two levels. We had like there's the bedroom downstairs, and then there was the hot tub outside of our back area there. And it was like private, but it was outdoors. It was fantastic. And then we had the room, a private room upstairs where you could just kind of hang out. We were up in this room, and the lady sits down with you and kind of walks you through some stuff. Like, you can rent a taxi cab driver for a day and all this other stuff. And because I was like, I'm not taking any buses anywhere, and I want to see like three or four things. That was definitely on the label. So I wanted to take that. And then when you go back to the trains, again, we can get you a taxi to take taxis straight back to the train station. So we get this ryokan. It was fantastic. They take you up to your room. The rooms were fabulous. We had a private tub. You could, or they had ones that you can go to that the communal ones. And then they had other private ones if you wanted something else. But in any event, so we got into our room. Lady walked us through the process. And then that night we had dinner. And dinner was, again, a traditional Japanese dinner, which was a sake. We had all kinds of – lots of small plates, lots of little round plates.
Did you sit on the floor?
The cool thing about this place was I tried to sit on the floor, and that's another story.
That's for a younger
this one
man.
Had, they they dug out – you could
perfect.
Sit down, but it looks like you're sitting in lotus style or whatever.
I can't
do
it.
You actually have a hole dug there.
My back won't allow
it. A hole dug.
Yeah, you put your feet.
Me
in the
neither.
Hole.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And so, and then they just start bringing you out dishes, man, one after another. It's like a 10-course meal, and so, but there was lots of like small courses, and so and they're all like everything from, you know, from sushi to, you know, rice and miso soup to different pickled vegetables.
And then
tofu that would be in a boiling pot that you kind of scoop out with a ladle. And then next to it was like this soy sauce, ginger sauce that you would just like, that was kind of cooking in this thing, and you pull it out and pour it on. It was just,
you're
all
making
the food
me hungry
was delicious.
Did you go around the area and see like the take the cable car and see like the sulfur geysers and all that, the hot, you know, stuff coming out of the ground.
So we went and saw the, so there's the Hakone Shrine, which is essentially a torii gate that leads out onto the lake. And then we saw, and then we went to some other torii gates that were kind of up on the mountain, up to another shrine. We went to there was an outdoor museum there that also had, which was kind of, even though it was raining, it was kind of cool. We had umbrellas, so we just hung out outdoors. It was kind of nice. But it had a Picasso museum that was outdoors as well, which was kind of interesting. We did a lot of wandering around really there at the outdoor museum. And so, and that was again, a situation where we rented a taxi cab driver for like 2.5 hours. It was like, I want to say like $100. It was cheap because the guy literally took us to a place, showed us where everything was and just waited in the parking lot for us until we were done. And then when we were done, we went down and he was there waiting for us and took us off to the next spot. So I didn't do the, was there like a funicular that took you up?
Yes, there's like a cable car. Yeah.
I didn't do that, and I forgot all about that. But I will say this though, and I don't know if you ever used any of these softwares that help you track everything that you're supposed to be doing on a trip. But there's anyways, this one called TripIt. It was actually good just because you could forward all of your emails from the airport or for the airlines and for the hotels and everything. And then any additional activities we would book through that. And so we tried to track everything on that. And so we didn't even hit half the stuff we were trying to book on there, but anyways, so that was Hakone.
That's great. Then you went to Osaka, right? I mean,
yeah, we went to Kyoto. Kyoto there for a couple nights.
Very touristy.
And then, very touristy, but I mean,
it's great.
Again, they have these great shopping areas, like shopping areas like I'm not sure I've ever seen
it's
before.
Like, it's like that market.
Yeah, it is very much a bazaar because it's, you walk, there's like a main road that has like your Rolex and your Cartier and all the big stores, you know, and then all of a sudden you look down this one road and it goes for miles and it's just all these little shops and food and everything. And again, we found one of probably the best vegan restaurants I've ever been to just down this little bazaar area. So that was Kyoto was good. Again, we climbed a mountain,
Bamboo Forest.
Inari. Yeah. We did the Bamboo Forest. Yeah. Yeah. It was good. That was kind of cool.
You went to Nara.
And then we took another
deer are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We took a train. What we did was we took a train from Kyoto down to Osaka. And before we went to Osaka, we went to a town called Koyasan, which is a Buddhist temple town. And it's all these Buddhist temples. And it's like from the 800s when some guy went there and like proclaimed this to be like up on this mountain to be the Buddhist temple town, if you will. So there's all these Buddhist temples there. It's fantastic. We went to a Buddhist cemetery at night. It was all lit up with with the lamps all throughout the whole place, and it's huge. It was actually kind of cool. But we stayed at a Buddhist temple, and we got to we eat with the monks, and that was that was where I tried to sit down in the lotus position. It's so uncomfortable, especially. No. Especially when in a kimono, it's not really no fun, but it was a good time. The food was fantastic. And that was vegetarian.
You ate at a temple in the temple.
Yeah. We stayed the night. We stayed in the temple, Buddhist temple. And so you do a meditation. You ate dinner and then you did a meditation and then you had the rest of the night to go run around and go check out some other temples in the area. And then the next morning you got up and at 6:30 you prayed with the monks for like about an hour. It was actually really cool. Praying with Buddhist monks for about an hour. And then after that we had breakfast and, we checked out, but, that was a really great experience. Just great spiritual experience.
No, that sounds great. So
I highly recommend it.
So Osaka is,
and then we went to Osaka.
Is that the second biggest city? Is that like the Chicago of Japan?
Yeah.
It's very popular to go to. It's one of the, you know, the second big, you know, thing to go other than Kyoto. Most of the people go to Osaka if they have time. I just still haven't been, but I want to. How different from Tokyo is it, or is it?
It's smaller, what's but. Interesting about? Yeah. So we had, everybody wants to go to Kyoto. Everybody wants to go to Tokyo. Like, so one of our guides one night was, he was actually from the Philippines, but he was living in Osaka. And he was doing a walking tour with us up in Kyoto because it's like about 45-minute train ride or something. And so he was telling us that he was living in Osaka, but his whole – like he couldn't find a job in Tokyo. He found a job in Osaka. And so he was living in Osaka until he could find a job in Tokyo because all the young people want to go hang out in Tokyo.
Right.
But Osaka was – Osaka was great. Again, it had even a bigger shopping, like one of the biggest shopping areas I've ever been to. It was like one area is like food, one area is like kitchenware, one area is like clothing, and it's just miles of like all these shops. It was amazing. And then one area is where I met Terrier. And we went out to dinner with him two nights in a row, and which was like, it was like right across the street from this area. So it was right in that, it was like a really super popular area. And so, Osaka was great. We had a great time in, I'm trying to think of all, we went to Nara one day, which has again, Buddhist temples and one of the biggest indoor Buddhas in the world or something like that. So, but they had the bowing deer. And they're super aggressive. You buy these cookies. You buy these cookies and you hand out a cookie. And as soon as you give them one cookie, man, they know you got the pack. So they're all over and they're nipping at you. It's crazy.
Is it an actual deer, is like a sanctuary, or is it just forest that just has a lot of deer? You could just go to, you know, it's not a zoo. It's not a zoo.
I tell you what, it is like
a zoo. Is it like a zoo?
It's because it's an open area. It is fenced in some spots, but you're walking across, you're walking through the area, and there's lots of deer. And we were talking to a guy at one of the information stations, and he was telling us like, hey, be careful of the deer because it's mating season right now. Ooh. And they're super aggressive. So like we bought our cookies and we gave a bunch of deer cookies, you know, and took pictures and they bow at you and you bow at them. And, it's kind of a novel little thing, but we went and checked out the Buddhist shrine, which was really, it was really cool. So we've done that as well.
You were there early October, shoulder season, good time to go. How was the weather?
Yeah.
And also, when I was there a couple of years ago, the exchange rate was fantastic. How was it? I think it's gotten a little not as good, but I mean, how was it, you know, money-wise?
It was actually pretty good. I gauge it from so 1,000 yen, you're looking at about $6.50, mm-hmm. call it $7. So that's about, you know, that's about right. So it's $6.50 to $7 per 1,000 yen, which was, it was good. I will tell you, you know, everybody, talks about how expensive Japan is. I didn't feel that. Like things felt cheap to me, to be honest with you. Like super high end hotels were good, $300 a night, which sounds like a lot, but in like a Hilton, it was a nice Hilton. So again, inexpensive. I thought it was good. Same with Tokyo. I mean, all of them, Tokyo, Kyoto, all the major cities all felt to me really a very inexpensive experience.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah. I found the hotel rooms can be expensive. Sure. In Tokyo for sure. And in the popular neighborhoods, and the rooms are always smaller than you expect.
Yeah.
The rooms are small.
Yeah.
But after that, once you get on in terms of, and of course, I'm coming at it from LA prices, which are ridiculous. But the the not tipping thing is a big deal.
Saves you 20%.
Yeah. And so
it saves
that
you 20% on everything.
Yeah. For each drink, for
it
each
sure
every
does.
Meal. The price is what it is on the, of what the sign says.
Yeah.
So, you just tap your card and you're done. But the not adding that extra 20% is massive. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
everything else was pretty cheap, I thought. Well,
yeah, no, I felt like it was very affordable. You know, I've said to some other people that I think the flights are the most expensive component of it, really.
Yeah.
You know, getting there is expensive, but once you get there, not bad. I found food to be inexpensive. I found clothes to be really inexpensive. Like, I bought a ton of clothes at the Uniqlo, but also bought like running shoes and things like that, like New Balance running shoes. I pay $160 for in the United States. They were like $100 in Kyoto, same exact shoe. So it's just like, you know, I saved on, there's no tax on it too. So, but in any event, yeah, I felt it to be very economical.
And how was the weather? You said it rained a little bit on you.
You know, it wasn't bad. It only rained in Hakone. Other than that,
that's where it rained on us.
That was the only place it rained on. It was, we had been watching the weather like for a week before we got there. It was supposed to rain every day, like 90% supposed to rain in Tokyo. We didn't get rained on once in Tokyo or the rest of the time, like in Kyoto or Osaka. I mean, it was cloudy a bunch of times. And the one time it wasn't cloudy, which was really good, was when we took a Shinkansen, the bullet train from Hakone, is it Odawara? I think that's
the train station. Yeah. And you posted the same exact video that I posted of the bullet train. I was man, that platform looks familiar. And then I look back on my video, it's like, oh my God, he might have been standing in the same exact spot.
So we took the train from there to Kyoto, and that train, we got to see Mount Fuji.
Right.
And they tell you all the time, like, hey, you got to sit on one side of the train, and we got lucky and got our tickets on that side. But more importantly, there was no
clouds
because they say it could be clouds all the time that, you know, and so it was we got some really good shots of Mount Fuji.
No, that's great.
So that was really,
well, I know people are like, boy, he eats a lot of vegan places. You obviously ate sushi, though. Is Nancy completely vegan? Does she eat sushi? And how was it getting around?
Yeah.
I know, like, a Piper, who I went with, she doesn't eat fish. So not eating fish in Japan can be tough. I mean, you can find, otherwise you're eating a lot of noodles. And even then, you know, the broth could be, you know, meat-based or you know, broth. You know, so you don't know, but how vegan did you go, and was it a hassle?
So Nance is actually more pescatarian.
Okay.
So she eats sushi, so it's not an issue.
Then you're fine in Japan.
Yeah. But we were just seeking, there's a few times when we were just kind of seeking out something different. We thought the sushis were really good. Like, we had some good sushis, but we had some really great, vegan and like way better than anything we've had in the United States, vegan or vegetarian meals. And then we had three or four. One was in Kyoto and twice in Osaka. The great thing about the noodle shops, if you will, like in Tokyo, we went to a noodle shop one time where you walk in and you have to get a ticket. So you pick out what you want on a board and got to pay it. And then it prints out a ticket and you hand it to the guy, and the guy sits you down and they make it for you right then and there. Udon, we had some udon, which was fantastic. And ramen, the ramen was at the vegan places, and it was fabulous. It was so good. That's probably one of the things I'm going to miss. The food was amazing.
Do you use we have a vegan app on the phone that seeks out restaurants and stuff wherever you go. Do you look it up beforehand, or are you just kind of like, do you just Google vegan restaurants in your area, or what's your usual go-to?
So there was one in Tokyo. I literally just in Google just said vegan restaurant near me. And that's the one where it was up on the third floor.
Yeah.
So that's how I found that one. The ones that I found in Kyoto, we totally stumbled onto. Like, we were just walking down the road and it had, you know, because everywhere has the proverbial pictures of the food and, you know, all that. And so there's one that said vegan. And I was like, oh, look at that. What is that? And we started reading through it. I'm like, let's go check it out. We went in and the broth was fabulous. It was just the whole meal was fantastic. So we just would stumble onto them.
Yeah,
literally.
Okay.
We wouldn't look anything up.
Any moments culturally?
I did try.
Oh, go ahead. You tried.
I was just going to say one more thing. The Wagyu beef. It's all bullshit. I think it's all fake. It's because so I was talking to a buddy about this because I took a picture of it and sent it to him. I'm like, hey, I'm in Osaka, man. They got Wagyu beef everywhere. And he goes, no, they don't. It's like 40. He's like, I think there's like 46 or 47 places that are officially allowed to like sell this stuff, you know? So if it's just some street guy, chances are pretty slim that he's got one of those licenses. Yeah. But
he's importing the meat from Canada or something.
Yeah. Yeah. But that being said, I did try a couple of the street ones, and because I still eat beef, but this is like I rarely eat it, but I had it. It was fantastic, you know. Again, on one of our tours, one of the guys took us to a Wagyu place, and it was expensive. It was like $20 for a stick with four little cubes on it.
Yeah, right. They
got
you.
But again. Yeah, they got you. You know, but it was good. It was good. So was it at Wagyu? I don't even know. I couldn't tell the difference, to be honest with you.
Did this light a fire from you in you to maybe see more of Europe? I mean, are you looking to go to more places? What's your next big trip?
You mean go to Asia?
I mean, sorry. Yeah. What am I saying?
Yeah.
I mean, was this your first? So yeah. It's a nice starter for Asia. You know what I mean? It's like.
Well, originally we had. Wanted to do Vietnam, Cambodia.
Yeah.
And I was like, we started putting it together and I was like, you know, why don't we dip our toe in the water and try something that might be a little less seamless. And so we did Japan. Let's do Japan. And it worked out.
Yeah. Fantastic. It's easy. It's safe and it's clean and it's efficient and one flight in, one flight out, basically, you know, you don't have to like really go around too much and navigate. But again, I hope you go see more. I mean, this is
No.
All the other Asian countries other than Singapore are going to be cheaper.
Yeah. So, And it's funny you say Singapore because we found that like the best way to get to Vietnam and to Cambodia is potentially through Singapore.
Or Hong Kong.
It's like LAX to Singapore.
Or Hong Kong. Or Bangkok.
But
that
was the other one through Thailand. So I mean we've got Vietnam, Cambodia for January, February of 2027 on our list.
Well, far ahead.
We'll definitely be doing that.
That's great.
I've got two stuff. I've got Spain, Portugal in February. We gotta go back to the UK in July. So we're booked for the year, but the following year we've already started to put Asia on there. So we're going back. Definitely. I'd love to go back to Japan and go back tomorrow. I wouldn't have left probably. So it was, you know, if I didn't have to.
Well, wow, Spain and Portugal.
Yeah, no.
Is this wine based or are you just gonna like, you know, you're just gonna
fun. Just
fun.
Gonna go investigate.
Have you been to Portugal yet?
I was in Lisbon the day before 9/11.
Oh my gosh.
Did I ever tell you that story?
I don't know.
Yeah, I was in Seville, actually. I was in Seville on 9/11. And then the next morning we took a flight out of Seville to Lisbon. And so we didn't know if it was going to happen, but Europe wasn't shut down. US was shut down. Everything went, but your head's not in the right space when that kind of stuff happens. Like you get to Lisbon and we investigated Lisbon and did all kinds of stuff, but you're still a little bit like wondering when are you
going
to
go home? I mean,
you're going to be able to.
When did you finally get to fly home? Yeah. You know,
we got lucky. We were there for a week, And it took a week before they opened airspace, I believe, back in the United States. And we flew from Lisbon back up to Heathrow. And we thought, if I didn't catch a flight out of Heathrow that day, we were just going to go hang out at my aunt. My aunt lives about, I don't know, an hour and a half north of London. So we were just going to go up to my aunt's house and hang out up there for a few days if we didn't. But when we got into Heathrow, apparently, like, everything started to open up and they just we continued to get out of there and go back to the United States.
What a weird time, wasn't it? And what was everybody asking you as an American? Like, what's happening? What are, you know, like, what's going on?
We were literally in a pub in Seville. We'd just seen Christopher, I'll never forget it. We just had been to the church where Christopher Columbus, his grave is. And so we were in there and looking around. Then we went and sat in a pub and we're going through the book to go figure out what we were going to be doing in Lisbon. And this couple next to us just started apologizing. Like, hey, I'm really sorry for what happened in the United States. We're like, we don't even know. So we ended up going down we ran down to a computer, the internet cafe. The old days of internet cafe. So you go to the internet cafe and they've got big screen and the big screen showing all the stuff you don't, you know, like the planes crashing into the World Trade Center and all that. And it's just like, ugh. And so in any event, so then you just start wondering, am I going to have to change stuff? And so that starts going through your head. And, it's tough, right? Like, it's when you're in those kind of situations, you just kind of got to plow through it. You talk to a few people back home. Is everybody okay? Right.
Well, you have a better story. Everybody, like, where were you? Everybody knows where they were when they found out. And I was asleep in my sad West Hollywood apartment. I mean, Seville is a much better story.
It was probably the one time I remember where people were just super friendly to Americans.
Yeah.
Not that people usually aren't, but definitely people were really super friendly that day.
And that lasted about, a few months, and then we invaded Iraq, and then people, you know, gave up on us.
And we're back to normal. Back to normal. Yeah, exactly. But, so I think you were saying something about culturally about Japan.
Yeah, I mean.
And I would say.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, we had a great time. You know, again, everybody was super kind, you know, polite, patient with you, and everybody's on time. And it's just like, you see that, and everybody plays by the rules. And because they do that, like, everybody, I'd say everybody falls in line, but everybody's respectful to each other. And it's just so nice to see. And it really is a nice, it recalibrates you almost, you know, spiritually a little bit when you're there. You know, especially when you're hanging out in the United States and you're constantly bombarded with all the shenanigans that are going on, you know, at least in this country. But to get out of this country and go there and see that 25 million people can live in a city and get along and live efficiently and not be rude to each other is just, it gives you, there's humanity out there, you know, it's good. Yeah, it's good to see. And so, gives you faith again. So, yeah. And I don't know how long it's going to last in me because I'm back here.
You're back into it.
But in any event.
And,
yeah.
And finally.
That's why I'd want to go back.
Yeah. And finally, the toilets. That's the hardest thing about coming back.
I'll tell you what. The technology over there on so many levels is just amazing to me. Whether it's. Well, the toilets are a big one. Like, if that toilets affect everybody,
yeah.
You know, and every toilet that we went to, and not just in a nice hotel, but like out, like
public bathrooms.
They have public bathrooms there that are clean.
I know.
Like, it's not. This isn't like some outhouse. It's like they've got people that actually take pride in cleaning these things, but they have this one company, Toto, and that's the company that makes all these toilets. And if that company came to the United States, they would kill it here because You
can order them. You can order those toilets, but they're pretty expensive.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not just the bidet, but like now they've got all kinds of other fancy little things on them. Like there's music on them and water flow. And cause apparently in Japan, like the women are real sensitive about like, noises and sure. stuff like that. Yeah. And so you can turn on like all kinds of little background music and stuff like that. So to drown out whatever else, but, yeah, toilets, the Shinkansen, those bullet trains, that's just, you know, that's what happens when company or when countries invest in infrastructure, you know, I mean, you have these trains that go 200 miles an hour and like, I don't know how many billion people have ridden on these things or how many, whatever, but it's crazy. Like they don't crash, you know, you yeah. never hear about these things.
There's
having
no
any issues,
yeah. but there's no reason we can't get from Boston to New York in 2 hours.
Yeah.
There's no reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Amtrak should have. Why?
Yeah.
Anyway. And the last thing I did find that was really, I think, I don't know if you saw the picture, but the, this beer pouring, apparatus machine that literally you just put the glass up there and it tilts the glass and pours you a perfect beer. And then tilts it back for you to pick up. And I was just like, again, I've never seen this in the United States.
I saw that video.
The technology is amazing there, and why some of this stuff hasn't come over here for us being so advanced.
Right.
I can't figure it out.
Okay. Well, we got to wrap this up. So tell me how people can find you. And speaking of, we talked about currency before, that's kind of your gig. So if people tell them about your business and where people can find it and find you online.
Sure. So, really kind of a more local thing here in Scottsdale area, Scottsdale, Phoenix, Scratch Exchange, scratchexchange.com. And we buy and sell foreign currency. Really the main foreign currencies, like, I say the main ones, but like euros, British pounds, Canadian dollars, Mexican pesos. We do yen now, because I needed yen. So I got into it and learned a lot more about it, but, we've been doing it for about 7 years now. And, yeah, it's, you know, there's the currency side of it, but what's kind of cool is, I meet a lot of people and get to talk about travel with people all the time. Like people come in, I have a small little office here. People come in, they tell me where they're going. And a lot of times if they're going to Europe, a lot of times it's places I've been. So we get to kind of swap stories and ideas on things to do and that kind of thing. So, so that's what I do right now. Scratch Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So check us out. And if you're in Scottsdale, stop by. Give me a call.
The only time I ever used actual like money, you know, currency in Japan, I think mm-hmm. was when we went to little dive bars in the Golden whatever. The little neighborhood with all the little old bars in it in Tokyo that they only did cash. But everybody else, you know, you just tap your card and you're good to go.
Yeah.
And I heard in the, did you have to use the Suica? Did you use the Suica app?
Oh, I'm going to tell you what.
I heard you don't even need that anymore. Or do you?
I think that is one of the most amazing apps out there. Because we use it in every city. So first there's just the card. Right. Like there's a Suica card and you at any train station, you could put more money on it like you would in most any major cities. Yeah. Yeah. You got the app that goes on the phone. All right. But, and that's what my wife used all the time, but I used my watch.
Yes.
And literally every time I went through the gates, like, and we went like every city. Use it, and you can use it not just, and I only used it on the trains, but I was told that like the 7-Eleven takes it, like Suica cards are good for all kinds of stuff. Yeah, vending machines. And so it was like, I could have tapped in with my watch every time. And so I moved it from my phone to my watch and the only time, you know, everyone, and to charge it up is so easy. You could do it on the watch or you could just go to the phone. You look your watch up and then find your Suica card. And it says, you want to add money? You go, yeah, tap on it. And your credit card's already in there. And like to add another 5,000 yen, like it happens in literally less than a minute.
Yeah.
And so I highly, highly recommend it. It was great. It was great to use. So, we used a little bit of cash, but that was the main thing we used. Suica card and probably our credit cards for stuff all the time. I heard that they were a very cash-based society, but I was seeing a lot more of the tapping in and tap,
It was only these little dive bars that they wanted cash. It was only like cash only. But other than that, you just use your card, just tap it.
Yeah.
It's easy.
And that's the same thing in Europe.
They'll take that.
They're doing Apple Pay and Google Pay, all those, all the transportation places. Like I know in London, cause we were doing this in London. I'm going to find out probably this summer if we can do it in France.
Oh, I'm sure you could. I'm sure you could,
but in any event,
Hey, Mo, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And thanks for doing this.
Always fun to be
Domo
here.
Domo arigato.
You know what? I learned four phrases, I think. Konnichiwa was the
Konnichiwa.
One. And that's
course.
Like afternoon, hello. Then,
arigato. Thank you.
Arigato gozaimasu.
Yeah, you got it pretty much. What are you going to look it up?
I've got them all here.
You wrote it on a piece of paper.
The arigato gozaimasu. Yeah, that was right. And then there was a kudasai, that one right there. And then, there was the other two. Oh, itadakimasu. Itadakimasu is before you actually. So with sushi, you take sushi and then you dip it into soy sauce. And before you eat it, you would say itadakimasu. It's kind of like a prayer to the food.
Okay.
And then the last one was gochiso samadashita, which is your sort of way of telling the chef thank you for doing such good work.
And so
that was the one that I probably used the most, because we just ate places and always wanted to say something to the chef because he did good work.
And so, kanpai.
In any event,
kanpai. The cheers. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, the cheers with sake.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
Oh, drank it. Yeah. So
you owe me a.
I did bring a
nice
bottle of sake back.
Yeah, I almost tried to meet you at LAX to get that bottle.
Yeah, I told you. Well, what happened was you go through the airport and you do the last duty free. And I did a sake tasting in Osaka on my way out of town. I was like, yeah, fine, crap. I'll take three bottles. Give them to me. And then as we go to the counter, the lady's like, so is your flight direct back to the United States? I go, yeah, it's direct to LAX. And then I go, then I got another flight. And she's like, you're probably going to have to check these.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's right. So I ended up just taking one bottle and then stuffing it in my luggage, because I had to pick up my luggage in LAX before I could forward it to Phoenix. And so I snuck one in there. So I got one good one. So you got it when you come to Phoenix.
Okay. I'll hold you to
it. So yeah, there we go.
Mark, thanks for doing this. It's always good to see you. And thank you for sharing your story with us, your travel tales.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Always fun. Always fun.
All right.
So,
Mark Parton, everybody.
I'm Pauline Frommer. I've spent most of my life writing, talking, and thinking about travel. Not just where to go, but how to go in a way that's meaningful. On the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore the trends, people, and ideas shaping how we see the world. If you care about the why as much as the where, I hope you'll join me. You can find new episodes weekly at voyescape.com.